Christ.
I'm telling you this thing. Are y'all aren't wearing them now? Okay. I was like, it's fogging up my glasses. Okay.
Download by
Barnes. Have you already called it to order? Have you? You have not? Okay. Okay. Cool. Transportation reports.
Okay, but we're going to put the reporter in the middle because you know, I did it last time.
Oh, that's why you had it down there? Oh, okay.
Well,
sorry, Kevin, will you come take this back? She said that it didn't. My apologies.
No problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Reach out there and say that Eric didn't get the HVAC on the schedule.
Okay,
Barnes,
what's that number?
529-28.
Yes, sorry, Eric's birthday. 529.
Conversation piece, not only between us and the board, but also the public, if there is anybody that cares for taking that conversation. I want to start off with the notice. As you recall, we were due to set tax rate in August, therefore the date. We did not provide notice to the paper. We're only required to notice one time in the paper. We pulled that from the agenda because the tax Montgomery County Appraisal District could not certify the tax roll or the certified roll, so we moved it to this meeting. According to the tax assessor, we were, again, only required to publish once, so we covered that requirement. This document is what was in the newspaper, I just want to drift down through there fairly quick and point out some numbers that should raise your eyebrow and give you the reason for that. One thing I want to preface the conversation with is we would now have very little say-so on what our tax rate really is, especially on the M&O side of things. On the M&O side of things, we basically don't have any say-so now. because the comptroller's office and TEA set our maximum compress rate that we can charge or we can set for M&O. The only thing that we have the choice of doing is deciding if or not we care to do the TRE, which we did. So therefore, we decide if we want to utilize all those pennies, which we do. So basically, we tack our 13 cents that we swapped off of the INS side and applied it to our M&O side. And basically, that's where we come up with our 97.51. If you'll look down here below, about halfway down.
You said we can't do anything about it, but if we had an election to up that, we could.
No, we're already maxed because we did the TRV. We've got all the golden pennies and all the copper pennies. So that little guideline, that little rule is for those districts that have not elected to have the TRV. We're maxed. When TA sets our maximum compress rate, we then applied all 13 bar pennies, so we're maxed at the M&O side. You can see that the comparisons of last year's rate versus this year's rate and such on this side. The only number that that's how it comes out in paper in terms of the INS, and that is basically the tax rate that they say we have to apply on the INS side to even out last year's rate, whereas it doesn't end up in there at the end of the year. It hasn't. So we're just about zero on our flip in terms of our tax rate for INS and the TRE flop. So I'd love to explain it, but
Timberlands.
You know, that's an increase. increase in it.
I can go over?
Yeah, apparently. Then you are.
She was.
But it should. It should.
Yeah. So, in terms of our increases in our proposed budget, at a 21% increase in offered MO, we're calling for a 5.15 increase, basically no increase in debt service. So a total deficit, or a total expenditure increase in expenditures is 1863 in the budget. And again, that goes, what I did.
I don't know.
That twice, that once is pretty good. So, those are budgetary numbers. You can see what's happening in terms of appraised values and such here on that middle section there of that notice. But those are basically the biggest numbers I wanted. Now, I'm going to eat the food. Must have a baked potato in the bakery. Another interesting component is, if you'll go up, hey, oh, I'm sorry, scroll down, yeah, there's your values here.
What is it this year?
Went from 163,000 to 179,000 this year. General, the other things that in y'all's packet.
What is the what is the voter approval rate? The highest tax rate. So that's just saying the highest could be this.
Yeah, we could set 173 without going back to the voters, which is a good thing, but we never will.
But we couldn't, no, right? Because the
answer.
Kevin, is that the assessed value? The 179? Is that the average assessed?
Average market value is that are assessed.
That's assessed. And we were projecting when they passed this bill to lower 11 cents the first year, 3 cents the following year, right?
But that didn't come to be, yes.
Didn't come to be, so we're coming down 9.
Yeah.
Which is better.
I mean, depends on what side of that fence you ride. If you're trying to pay the bills around here, it's not very good. But for taxpayers like you and I, it is pretty good. That?
I remember one of the workshops you mentioned 11. I guess that was their formulation for the law.
11
cents.
Since this year?
Yeah, a while back in the workshops.
I'll get back to that.
With calculations, we're still working. So.
Yeah.
So,
there's not a whole lot we can do in this.
No.
There's a lot of verbiage that's changed, especially for you guys that have been on the board for a while. There was an attachment that I put with this that was from TEA that does a lot of explaining when you have time. Maybe read through that just to get familiar with the new net revenue, no new revenue, the voter-approved tax rate. I mean, they basically changed everything, so when you have time. Do you have any other questions specific to tax rate? Anyone in the audience? Sir?
I said, no one has any questions on it.
We've been asked.
Well, I mean, when it is what it is, it's hard to have a question.
Yeah.
It's not.
This is a good addition to
the tax rate. We're setting a lower tax rate than what we set last year. That's the bottom line and the talking point that we have going forward. Part of that is due to increased values, and that is an issue.
Again, it goes right back to what we said last year. The district, obviously, in the last few years now, has gone down 17 cents, right? It was 157, then we were 129, and then no, it was 60.
We were at 160. Now we're just under, we're 19
and
change.
19 and a half cents or ish that we've gone down the last 2 years, yet people's taxes are still going up.
They're not, right? I agree.
They were supposed to, according to If you'll change to the document that's titled Property Tax Code Worksheet, on the M&O side alone, it's dropped. It's going to drop their M&O tax rate $93 per 100,000. So.
So it's going to drop it?
That's what they're saying. Yeah. That's what that document says.
Well, it said raise the most part.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and that's the crazy part of the notice. But here's the M&O basically worksheet from the tax office. And right here is your $93.30 per 100.
If you value it, you
correct. All right.
I think one thing to just point out, really, I guess I'm still a little fuzzy on the where it says the maximum that we can charge is $1.73. I don't understand that perfectly.
And I think that is going to be a contrast or maybe a conflict from the tax office to what TEA is telling us, because I don't think we have an option to go to 173.
Yeah, I've never understood that.
When TEA says this is your MCR, that's it, and you can tack your 13 cents on it, and that's it. I mean, we'll never have that conflict because we won't be allowed to do it as long as TEA is setting our maximum compressed tax rate on the M&O.
Because remember, Kenny actually had an election to
increase their tax at 67. We could have went to 67.
They already matched that.
But I don't think they did, Terry. I think what they did is they went to the community and got the tax rate, because
they went for a straight TR. They had a TRE and they went for the straight one, straight 13 cents. They didn't do a swap like we did. They went straight up, which was.
And then they maxed their IMS.
Yeah.
And then they exceeded the M&O part. That's when they
had the election to be able to do that. But if you're saying, like, we couldn't even, well, not if we would want to, but if we ever wanted to go above $1.73, we couldn't even do it because they.
We're maxed.
We're maxed.
We got 10 cents on it.
But everybody across the state is maxed on their M&O. When I say everybody, 80% of the districts are maxed on their M&O. So I think the talking point from our perspective is, if you want any funding change at this point with public education, well, we've kind of already been in this boat, it's straight up. Because right now, I mean, I see Brandon Crichton, he posts about, you know, I will cut your tax rate, you know, hey, I did a great job, I'll end up there not to cut your tax rate. Well, from now on, he owns what we can receive here. He owns it because they took it.
Yep.
So it's on them. It's on our state reps. It's on our state senator. You know, they own it. They took it away from us.
Yeah, so that's
what. Well, the thing that they're continuing to not say, though, is by continuing to raise values, they're shifting that burden to the taxpayer again, because the state share is decreasing and the local share is increasing. It just washed. It's a pass through.
Right. Backdoors through tax.
That's exactly
it's
what
totally,
it is.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. That's all I got.
Thank you, sir.
Thank y'all.
You put the mic on the other.
He was he didn't show up to clean up yesterday. He was not busy.
Oh, he was? He was watching?
No. So, we had lunch today, but he didn't go work.
Oh, look at that.
I'm really lying.
Oh, that's the party mumble? And that's the party mumble?
I'm going to brag a little bit on the
ag teachers for a couple of things that I did see while we're down there. Hunter Johnson, he's a, I think he's a seventh grader. He has a steer, and the whole time there's a steer, the whole time he's on it, the steer's had a nose ring. Hadn't been able to walk the steer. They got him out there at the show, and all the ag teachers were gathered around that kid, helping that kid walk that steer, teaching him what to do. And so to see that whole group come together and see what we see at that fair out of those teachers, that was kind of neat to see something like that. We hadn't seen in a couple of years, I'd say.
Yeah, there was an awful lot of support at the sale on Saturday. So I was over there, several of the supporters, so it was a good time. First time I've ever seen anything like that, quite frankly.
Really?
Yeah.
It's really fun. It's great. It's easy to find for my kids that are, you know, really, it's a great organization for this local here.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would think the crowd was going to be down. I think they had that.
It was not down.
It was not down.
It was.
Crowd was.
It was a healthy crowd. That was awesome. Kevin did a great job.
Yep.
Yep.
As well. Adam, catch some videos. It was awesome. The kids dominated.
Kevin, will you be the auction manager?
I'm just the guy that calls out the add-ons.
Yeah.
He's the backup auctioneer. I'm just the voice saver.
All right. Thank y'all very much. Now, the Hannibal Care Initiative presentation. Get the microphone up there. Unused.
Good evening. My name is Shanna Redwine. I'm a prosecutor at the Montgomery County District Attorney's Office. Right now, I serve as the chief of our Special Victims Division. And so the prosecutors in my division handle all forms of child abuse cases, child physical abuse, child fatalities, child sexual abuse, internet crimes against children, human trafficking, and domestic violence. I've been a prosecutor for the better part of a decade, and a large portion of that time I've spent handling child abuse investigations. And what I can tell you is that whenever you're handling child abuse investigations, when you're working in any form of child welfare, one of the most important things is that the adults who are charged with keeping children safe, that they're communicating with one another. There are never too many safe adults in a child's life. There are never too many adults working together to make sure that our kiddos are safe. As I know that you all know on the board, COVID has presented an especially dangerous time for children in our community. Isolation is never safe for children. And all of our good teachers that we have here in Splendora ISD and across the county just are not able to lay eyes on these kids. And so what I expect to see, what I worry about, is that as the fall continues and as our kiddos get back into school and start feeling safer, that we're going to start learning about things that have been happening to them over the last 6 months. I can tell you that I have my prosecutors preparing for a very high caseload in the fall, and I expect that our law enforcement partners and our partners with Child Protective Services, CASA advocates, and then the family courts as well are expecting to see that rise in cases as kiddos start talking. So there's no better time for the initiative that I would like to present to you. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. There's a couple of handouts that are on your screen. I have copies of those that I can leave with you, so I know the font's small. But the process is really simple. It's called Handle with Care. And if I could sum it up in one word, it would just be communication. We have talked to several school districts across the county, and what I hear most often from school boards and from administration is, man, we hear about something horrible happening on the news, and then we watch the news to see if it's one of our kiddos. And we don't want that. We don't want that for our kids. We don't want that for our teachers. And so what Handle with Care is, it is a process by which law enforcement can make a notification to school districts if a child experiences a traumatic event. This is a notification of non-confidential information. We all know that we're bound by some confidentiality requirements on both ends. But the notification will look something like this. Say you have an officer with Precinct 4, with the city of Splendora, and they go out to a domestic violence. And dad assaults mom, and the children are present. They witness it. And what that law enforcement officer can do is they'll make their CPS report, as they're mandated to do. And then what we're asking the school districts to do is have an email. handlewithcare@splendoroisd.net. And that officer, after he makes his CPS report, can send a very simple email notification that just says two things. Bless you. It'll say handle with care, and it'll have the child's name and date of birth. And that would go to a central administrator with your school district, who can then push that down to the appropriate school and to the appropriate teacher. When a teacher gets a handle with care notification, we're not asking teachers to interview children. That wouldn't be appropriate. We're not asking teachers to try to figure out what happened. All that teacher is asked to do is just kind of keep an eye, right? Keep your eyes open, keep your ears open. Maybe you have a kiddo in class who's falling asleep or who's acting out. And what we know about trauma in children is that sometimes it looks like anger, sometimes it looks like defiance, sometimes it looks like inattention or disinterest whenever a kiddo gets to school when they've been up all night because something horrible happened. So with that additional information, the teacher can then keep a close eye on that child, kind of maybe question things that they're hearing or that they're worried about. Maybe it makes the teacher say, you know what, I didn't know if I needed to make a CPS report on Johnny Smith, but I think I do. Right? Say he comes to school with injuries, and the teacher doesn't know, and he gives maybe a somewhat plausible reason for those injuries, but guess what? We got a handle care notification on Jimmy last week, and so I'm going to make that report. So what it's going to do, it's going to equip your teachers and your counselors within the school to really just know, okay, we know that this child has experienced trauma, and maybe that means I need to, you know, watch them closely, and at some point I'm going to make a CPS report. Maybe it just means they need a snack, right? Maybe it just means they need to spend 30 minutes in the nurse's office. They won't know exactly what it is, and that's by design. It's to avoid you guys having to have any confidential information that you can't possess. And same thing on the law enforcement side. But it just gives those teachers some information to know this child has experienced some sort of trauma. We need to keep an eye on them, and we need to handle them in a trauma-informed way. This is a partnership, and I'll tell you, a lot of these materials came from a nonprofit organization out of San Antonio. This has been implemented in San Antonio ISD. Originally, it came out of state. There's about 60 cities across the country that this process is implemented in. But we're not going to be the first in Texas. I hope we're at the front of the line of a lot of school districts that do this. But a lot of these materials have been provided to us, and then we took them and we kind of customized them for Montgomery County, for our schools across the county, and we would like it to be consistent across school districts. We are creating, personnel with the district attorney's office, as well as the training director for CASA Child Advocate. She has volunteered her time graciously. And what we will do is we're creating a 5-minute video that will be pushed to law enforcement, as well as to the school districts, and you guys can push that down as you see fit. We're happy to come train anybody anytime. Just let us know when you want us. But this is the quickest, most direct, kind of simple way to get this into the hands of your teachers. We would envision that you guys receiving this email and your administration can review it for content before you send it out. And then it can just be pushed to your teachers saying, hey, this is a new initiative. You might start receiving these emails that say handle with care. Give me a short 5-minute video that says, what is trauma? What might you see with a child who's experienced trauma? What does it mean to get handle with care notification? Means that child's been a victim of or has witnessed severe trauma, and what do you do? And what are some things that you can do to help? We'll make sure we put that disclaimer in it that this is not a substitute for a CPS notification. Your teachers are mandated reporters. They're going to have to report that. But really, it boils down to communication. Quarterly, we would have a status, and that would be with law enforcement agencies, the DA's office, CASA, as well as a representative from your school district across the county. About every 4th month in this first year, this initiative would get together. You could tell us what's working, what's not working. We're happy to do the footwork on the law enforcement side as well to make sure that all of us are communicating just a little bit better. And I think what we're going to see is that we're going to serve our kids better when we know something's going on. Unfortunately, kiddos don't often tell. Delayed outcry is a very normal thing. If anybody's worked in child abuse, sometimes it goes on for years. And so my hope, and the hope of kind of the startup team on this initiative, is that this will allow more eyes, more caring, safe adults to put eyes on these kiddos in a way that they just wouldn't be able to do if they didn't have some sort of notification. And so what we're working on is by mid-October, we're going to have that video ready to push out to you. We're meeting with law enforcement agencies across the county. I saw a couple in uniform here. You're probably going to be getting a call from us. We met with several of them. They've given us all their verbal buy-in. Every single school district and law enforcement agency that we met with is excited. We're working on the logistics, and we're kind of doing that just to have a central team to make sure that we're consistent across the county. We will push you guys the supplies that you need. We'll push you guys the trainings that you need. And then we will host those quarterly status meetings to make sure that this is working well. What we're asking for you is one central email, right? We're going to have patrol deputies on high-intensity scenes. We would like a central email across the county. We're making cards for our law enforcement agencies, similar to the Miranda cards that a lot of your officers carry. It'll be a broken-down version of what Handle with Care is, and on the back, we're going to have a county map with the school districts, and then each of the school district emails. So what we'd be asking for you is just an email account, Handle with Care. It's LenoraISD.net. A central administrator to push that to the appropriate schools and the appropriate teachers and counselors, and then just eyes and ears. Just your eyes and your ears on your teachers for these kiddos. We'll handle the front end work, and then we'll handle kind of the maintenance of it as it gets kicked off. But it's something we're really excited about. We're excited about your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you guys have. I also have my contact information on the form that you see there on your screen, and I will leave that with you. I have a couple of cards as well. But I can take any questions that y'all have now.
You might have a few, but anyone else? So you said you've been speaking with other districts. Are there other districts in Montgomery County that have adopted this and have already initiated it?
Yes, ma'am. So we met with, just kind of the way scheduling broke down, we met with Montgomery ISD first, and we have a contact person with them. We met with Connor ISD next, and they have a few follow-up questions for us, but they're very excited on the board. Met with you guys tonight, meeting with Willis on Thursday, and we're still working on getting scheduling with New Caney ISD. We've also met with, we started with the law enforcement agencies on our multidisciplinary team. Those are the agencies that are housed at Children's Safe Harbor, just because they handle a lot of our child abuse cases. So that's Precinct 3, the Sheriff's Department, Conroe Police Department, and CPS is on our startup committee, and then Officer Duncan with Constable Hayden with Precinct 4.
Thank you. What will you be measuring for, by the way, I think it's fantastic.
Thanks.
Just start with that, because you're right, especially in COVID, it's a very important circumstance. But what will be measured as far as improvement with both the program and what the district could, will you be measuring, number of emails, or are there, will there be measurables, will there be reports, et cetera?
Yes, ma'am. I think that's a really good question. And I'll tell you, for startup purposes, our thought was to leave that to the schools. I've heard valid points on both sides of if the school district wants to keep a list of Handle with Care notifications. Right, if I'm a second grade teacher and one of my kiddos had 8 last year, I might want to know that. But then that's going to be up to the school district's retention requirements. We don't want to require any specific retention requirements. We're going to leave that to the school districts. The notification to the teachers from law enforcement is really the biggest initial push and phase. Now, I can tell you that the nonprofit that kind of launched this in Texas was Fedora ISD. They're out of UT San Antonio. I know that they researched this extensively, but they're very gracious with their materials and with their startup. If they're non-proprietary, they allowed us to take what we wanted, change what we wanted, and make it work for our county. So there is no reporting requirement, but as a county-wide committee, a Handle with Care committee, I think that as a part of our quarterly status checks, that would be a very important step in phase two, is to continue getting that feedback. If there are any measurables, that would help us know if we're being effective or not. But a lot of it is anecdotal, right? So for one particular first grade teacher, she might get 6, and 3 of them she might need to make a CPS report, and 2 of them she might just need to, not do anything. And so it's going to be kind of dependent upon the situation. And I think the notification is very crucial, and I think that any reporting requirements or statistics or retention requirements will come from that committee that we create for the follow-up. The organization recommends quarterly, and I think that's a good number, and I think the committee can then decide if we want to do more or less. But I envision that as a phase two project. I would really, really, and I'll tell you, we have fairly lofty kind of startup goals. We would like to have a go live date of October 30th, and that is ambitious, But that gives us about 6 weeks with these kiddos before they leave again for another month of getting some of these notifications. And I can tell you my position on it will be as many school districts as are ready to go and as many agencies as are ready to go, we're going to say, let's start. And if we bring people on as the semester continues, great. But I think putting eyes on some of these kids is better than none. And so that's kind of what our hope is. We have a startup committee meeting on Friday. We're making the video in the interim 2 weeks, and we're going to have that push to the startup committee and to our contact with each school district to make sure everybody approves it for content. And then we'll be pushing that down, and our hope is to at least start making notifications with as many agencies and school districts as are ready on October 30th, and then phase in additional agencies and additional schools as they're ready. That was a long answer to a short question.
Oh, that's good. And so you're just to kind of go back to your example, an officer makes that a call, there's a student involved, yes. He sends in this email, he's not providing specifics, right. It's really
handle
with FYI, handle with care.
On the front end, we will train on what that might mean. So your teachers would know they either witnessed a traumatic event, they're a victim of a traumatic event. We've asked CPS to have their caseworkers make these notifications if they remove a child and place them into foster care or place them with a family placement. Could you imagine, you know, getting pulled from your parents, going to school the next day? That's going to take a little while longer. Their program director is very... she works very well with us, and she's working on that. That's not anything that I can commit to them being ready to do, but our local Children's Advocacy Center is going to help us as well. If they get a notification of a kiddo who maybe has a forensic interview, outcries of sexual abuse, and for whatever reason it didn't go through the normal route, I expect that they would be ready to make those notifications as well.
So that's kind of where I was going. They're making this notification, and I can see both sides of that. Be very vague, because you don't want to provide too much information at the same time, enough for the teacher to be able to respond. And so, going back to that though, is the end goal, and I think it's wonderful that, you know, the officer in that case would have been notifying CPS probably, right? It's not, the end goal is not for the district to be, you know, doing all of this, if that they're not already doing. The end goal is just treatment of those students. Just be aware, give them some grace, and hopefully they'll have a better day knowing that they had a bad night. So that's basically the end goal, the purpose of having this.
Yes, ma'am, that's exactly right. In fact, that's one of our biggest concerns, is we don't want there to ever be a situation in which somebody fails to make a CPS report because they mistakenly believe that this is a substitute for that. And so when we're training law enforcement, included in the video that everybody will get, it will be made very clear that this is not a substitute for a CPS report. Everybody involved in this process is a mandated reporter, from me to your teachers, your counselors, law enforcement, patrol on the scene. And so if there's a concern for child abuse or neglect, that 1-800 number is the first number to call. This is a supplement to that. This is something that we're doing within the county. Now, I can see a teacher seeing a kiddo, not knowing there's a CPS report already made, having additional concerns and making an additional report. And, you know, our friends at CPS might get some additional reports out of this, and that's okay. They can combine those real quick at intake. But both, and you'll see on the material on your screen when I hand it out to you, there's even on these materials, there's a notification that this is not a substitute for a CPS report. And we train our law enforcement that if they're on the scene and they have a concern for abuse or neglect, that they are to make that report as a mandated reporter. And we have a process and a check for that. When our trial court prosecutors see these cases, we'll email the officer, hey, did you make a report? If not, can you make one and send me the case number? And we handle it that way. So this is not a substitute for that. This is not pushing that duty onto your teachers at all. It is a supplement, not a substitute.
Just one comment. I think
how many counties do you think are in this program?
So, according to the organization that provided us the materials, I think they said 61 cities across the country. Cities, and you got to think like San Antonio. You know, they're calling it's a large city. That is the first one in Texas that I know about. But again, there's no reporting requirement back to the agency. They ask that you tell them if you get a startup, but they're very generous with their. With their materials, like I said, they've given them to us in a non-proprietary nature. They let us change them, and they're not requiring us to report back anything. If we get started, I'll give them a heads up. Hey, thanks, you know, it's going well, and they provide a lot of resources and follow up. And so that's how they're getting those numbers. So it could be much higher, but I know that San Antonio ISD has implemented this program. We just want to do it countywide.
Are there any groups that are lobbying for this to be a mandate?
It's in my mind. I don't know of any groups lobbying for it, but I love the idea of teachers being made aware and a non-conflict. There's a fine line, right? And I can understand an argument or a concern, like, hey, I don't want my kid labeled as a kid who got hurt, which is really the confidential kind of side of that. The reason that we're not giving details, and I can't speak for the implementers of the program, but the idea is that we're not telling them everything. We're not telling them their CPS history. We're not telling them that mom and dad are, going to jail. Just, hey, this kiddo's struggling. It could be a kiddo, they see a fatal car crash, right? Or they're involved in a fatal car crash. So it's not all criminal. I think a lot of them will fall on that side. But, Chief Walsh, to answer your question, I think it would be, my personal opinion is that adults who care cannot know too much about a kiddo who's really struggling so that you can wrap around them. So I've not heard of that, but I can see it happening.
We talk a lot about wanting our teachers to know our kids. I think this is just one more piece of information. I think that a lot of the value in this program, in my opinion, is going to come from the collaboration effort. Because I think sometimes different government entities get in silos, and
yes.
I think by having educators, having school districts represented, law enforcement represented, all at the table, once a quarter, I think that alone. I hear a lot of complaints kind of the other direction. Having CPS in the room with educators, I think, is going to be a lot of value.
I can tell you, as a child abuse prosecutor, we have worked extensively over the last several years to improve communication between your traditional and the court process, between us and CPS and law enforcement and CASA and attorneys who are representing kiddos in these cases, and the work product that I have seen in our investigations of severe physical abuse and neglect and medical abuse and sexual abuse cases, it's changed the way that we prosecute cases. The work product I get at the end is much better.
That's great.
I think I work with kids, and I think this is one area that has not been covered, because I think as teachers, as educators, we push out the information that we hear from kids. We don't always get the information back. So I think coming from, we don't always know what happens from there. So I think that's really good. I think what we would have to watch is how we implement it here and make sure that, there are teachers like, hey, I heard Johnny, something happened last time. That kind of stuff. And I think, just to really kind of maybe funnel it through the council department or something that would be, and then the district would decide how to share the information from there, because I think sometimes somebody might get curiosity. Not to say I wouldn't trust our teachers, but the more that we get comments like that, we really have to be careful about that.
And we would want that as well. In a criminal investigation, if we have a child being interviewed for a criminal prosecution, we want that done at Safe Harbor with a trained forensic interviewer. That's just best practice. And so we definitely not encourage. Child starts talking, you can listen, you can support, you can take to the counselor, but we've never encourage interviewing a child, and that is always a concern. I am sensitive to any child being labeled as a kiddo who's troubled or who has trouble in a way that's not productive. So that's certainly something that would be on all of us to make sure that we're responsible with that information. Yes, ma'am.
Sheriff, thank you for bringing this to us. This is very timely. I think now that we have our kids back in school, we're starting to see some of these things manifest, because now they're back in a kind of a consistent, stable environment. So you mentioned that LA Doctor. I think this is, and I applaud the county for wanting to do this countywide. So thank you for bringing this.
I appreciate it. All these things.
Thank you very much. All right, moving on to something even more exciting, tax attorney report.
I'm Alan Bush, my line barber. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you, old lady. Right here.
We're not going to need that.
When I first showed up tonight, I had no reason to believe that the delinquent tax presentation would be our light conversation. That was quite a
heavy topic. Thank you very much, John, for bringing it.
Anyhow, tonight with me tonight, we brought a couple of team members. We've got Jeff McRae,
We've got Maris Blair, and back here in the room, we've got Julie Darner. So we were wanted to come by this evening and connect with you guys about the past year. The one thing before we dive into that I really wanted to congratulate y'all on was I was amped to see the comeback story out at the EMC sale this past weekend. Because with the Montgomery County Fair not happening, and all of the kids, you know, who had bought animals, raised animals, and then were left in a lurch, I am thrilled that happened. So the comeback story I saw out of that is fantastic. It makes me think a little bit about Walt Disney. Did y'all know that before he ever had Disneyland's, Disney World, Mickey Mouse, it took him a while to be successful? He went through a couple of things. So these kids got the opportunity to learn about sometimes you gotta make it through things, that delay, to get to the greatness. Fantastic experience. Now, just like the academic calendar has been delayed and taken a little bit of a ding from COVID-19, so has our collections year calendar. When COVID first came down in mid-March, the Montgomery County Tax Office made the wise decision to give us a pause on all outbound collection activities. No phone calls, no letters, no lawsuits. And that was a smart decision given what was going on in our community with employment and all of that kind of thing. So we paused those outbound collection activities until we began starting to ramp things back up on July 1. So roughly 2.5 months out of our collection year were spent not outbound activity, but simply preparing for that outbound activity. So we've got a little bit of a delay in the numbers that we're going to talk about this year, but I want to assure you that we're poised for a fantastic comeback story. Because the same firm that's got a great engine behind it, which has done wonderful for y'all the past couple of years on your collection numbers, is now fully engaged in collecting on our delinquent accounts. So in your board books, you've got our presentation, and there's a cover letter to it. We're gonna skip right past that. And I'm gonna talk you through the numbers. Because now that you're done with some of the tax rate calculations and everything that y'all dealt with, I'm sure y'all are feeling a little bit like Saturday Night Live portrayed Jimmy Carter. The point over the whole skit where it's like, I was told there'd be no math. I'm going to keep the math to a minimum tonight. A little housekeeping matter, we're beginning on page 1, where you can see that our reporting point here is October 2019, and we're going to run it through August of 2020. That's a little bit of a funny year, but we're matching that 12-month period right behind today, September. That does not match with your calendar year, your fiscal year, which runs from July 1 all the way through the end of June, right? So I would suggest that next year that we come back and do this report, we instead do it in July. And we run our numbers by your fiscal year. Would that sound like a game plan to y'all? So we'll dive into
some. Sorry? No, I was just saying that I want to know more about the pros and cons of doing that before we change the reporting. I don't know.
Okay. We can take that up at the end, or would you like to discuss that a little bit right now?
Let's go.
Okay, all over it. Bottom line is, this report's going to cover a little bit of a funny period, October to August, so it's less than a typical 12-month stretch. And what we're looking at here on this first page, we'll see that our delinquent tax roll is roughly a little over $1 million, about 1.2 on base taxes delinquent today. Subsection Roman numeral 2 is about our litigation activity. That activity is a little bit down from last year because of that 2.5 month pause that was in there to wisely let folks recover from COVID-19. The other thing that's interesting to note is Roman numeral 3 on tax deferrals.
We have 62 total tax deferrals. And what a tax deferral is it's when somebody goes down to MCAD and meets some legal requirements. They're either over 65 or they have a qualifying disability. They fill out the paperwork with MCAD, the appraisal district. And when the appraisal district says thumbs up, you have a deferral. Well, now this account is one where all collection activity must stop. So the dollar figure we have that's deferred that we cannot be collecting on is a little bit under $200,000. So that accounts to about 16% of our total delinquent tax roll that we have right now is a no-touch type account. Digging into the next page, we'll see here in our mailing section, we're missing one mailing that we wound up skipping. We typically will mail in April, but that mail drop came during a time where we were all stopped with COVID-19. So that mailing got skipped and consequently some of the collections came off of it. Didn't occur in that same reporting period. Diving down to the next section, you're looking at the delinquent collections. And in that most recent reporting period of July 1, to 19, to the end of June this year, that accounts in that period, you've still got that 2.5 month all stop period. So that's what's going on there. Moving on to the last two pages, we got some pie charts, because I want to get out of the numbers game and look at pictures. It's easier for me. I'm a blonde Aggie lawyer. So, what I see here on this first pie chart, this SISD delinquent tax roll by year, this gives you a little bit of an idea of how healthy is our tax roll. How old are the tax years that we're working on collecting on? Because the older a debt gets, the harder it is to collect. Great news out of this. We're seeing 72% of our delinquent tax roll that is from the last three tax years. In other words, it's all fairly current stuff. You know, only 28% of it is beyond that. And it's not that old. So, we're doing a good job in terms of keeping the tax roll fresh and moving. The last page, which is kind of interesting, a unique thing about this year's tax roll, this is the SISD delinquent tax roll by dollar range. This is a pie chart that says, okay, out of all of our delinquent tax roll that we have right now, how big are these accounts? The first thing that you'll see is you see that dark blue pie chart in about the, say about the 11 o'clock position right there. That is one single account, which is currently 12% of our delinquent tax roll. That one account has not gone delinquent before on this type of business personal property. Within less than a month after us getting the go-ahead to begin collection activities, we had this account on a payment agreement for a term of 8 months because the tax office wanted to grant a little extended payment terms to folks who were struggling with their business in COVID-19. This account was definitely impacted. By January of 2021, that entire 12%, if the agreement is paid on, it's gone and paid in full. So, what we're seeing is we're seeing activity on the roll, and we're engaging that same engine that's done a fantastic job over the next couple of years. Any questions? Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to work with you guys, and keep at it.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Captain.
That's
great. Thank you. Good to see y'all.
All right, next up is our monthly police report. Chief?
Quick, one second. The monthly stats from last, probably 2 weeks ago at Ryan, changed a lot. May have added one or two things after I got in some of the work cards.
pretty much everything's the same. Significant events, I think I said last time, those are events that could draw media attention or just stuff that I think that the administration needs to know. We had a fire alarm at Peach Creek. We had to actually evacuate students out of the gym. It was a sensor issue, so that is being fixed. Nobody was hurt. The kids loved it. But we did have a bus wreck the next day, so that week was busy on Tram Road. Piece of mowing equipment, clipped the mirror on the bus. Driver had some minor scratches, no kids were hurt. We got them to school as fast as we could. Personnel issues were the same as we were. As of today, on my end, I have hired a new officer that speaks Spanish. So that is good for me. The SISD paperwork is being filled out this week, and I will hope to have her within about 2 weeks. She will have to go to the city and possibly the constable to do some field training. I would say 4 to 6 weeks, but we will find her at the school district. And so one more to hire before the end of the year.
It's a brand new officer.
A brand new officer coming straight out of UHD Academy in June. So, but she speaks Spanish. So that's big for me.
Chief, I'm sorry, I should ask this
during
our review, but what is secondary calls?
Secondary calls would be like the bus wreck. I'll be the primary unit, but there'll be other officers there to back me up.
Gotcha.
So, and that could be the alarm, the bus wreck, anything to work on. That's all I have. Let's go to the questions.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Next up, GTE update.
As we talked in the agenda meeting, I'd updated some of the report for some questions asked. I'm happy to say, like our CTE additions, we do have the concrete board in the back of the CTE building and the ag barn. Robotics lab is ready to roll for kids this next year once we get a new addition where we post some robotics in there. Looks good. Took them some time to get the slabs done, but now we're seeing some headway. They also poured a little makeshift walkway from the CTE building to the animal science lab, the vet tech lab.
So, what's your robotics lab?
Robotics is in the old art class, one of our old art classes where it's at. And it's got hard back in it until we're able to split and go to the new wing. Some of the updated Lone Star Level 1 certifications, we talked about that. Like Susan and I are extremely excited about the EKG, the AutoCAD. I told y'all, and some of y'all weren't at the update meeting or the review meeting. Lone Star is working extremely well with this and kind of giving us freedom of when we can do it, how we can do it, and providing a professor when basically our kids are in certain courses on campus and it'll be online and they'll do a synchronous type situation for our kids. So that's pretty cool on that end. Machining dual credit, we actually just finished our first round of blueprint reading for those kids dual credit this past week. It was delayed due to COVID when Lone Star shut down and all that went on, but we are capable of finishing it before really the semester starts. So Mr. Blake just finished that, and they'll start their new course here pretty quick. IBC, as you see, the next industry-based certifications. We assign our teachers a task to come up with the certifications that fits their needs, where they get some buy-in in it, instead of myself come in there and say, hey, you're going to do this, going to do that. They seem to take a little more heart to it and agree and want to do it. So we've got an IBC certification for each program or study that meets our state requirements for accountability and what our students need to get a little better job employment opportunities. Our programs of study, as we said, we increased from this past year from 17 programs of study to 23 that our students are capable of doing. Kind of pathways we talked before in the agenda review committee. States kind of lined it out and helped us, and we can align out the program to study that makes it a little easier. It's kind of like more college-based. When you go to look at a degree plan, here's your degree plan. This is the pathway you take to it. And it's kind of a good way for a counselor to be able to look at it and follow along. So we're pretty excited about that. We can still have some flexibility in it. We're going to adjust a little bit as the years go. Our freshmen this year are basically the first ones to start it and stick through that and go from there. Suzanne had asked for our class enrollment. I've got that data there for you. That is the current enrollment for this fall semester, from seventh grade CT courses through all of high school. So that's just listed there. It's just a total number. It isn't broken down by teacher. If y'all want that by teacher, I can do that. But some of the courses, like your welding, are taught by a couple of teachers. There's a few of those courses that are taught by certain different teachers. One thing that's different this year is your wildlife in eighth grade. Ag is a high school credit. Looking at that now, next year I think I'm going to change it to the principal's course and push that down to the eighth graders and do a little different thing there, and doing some different options. But the wildlife is for weighted funding, just in case you don't know, so we're getting a little bit of that. And we're going to look at some other principal courses, possibly the pre-construction. It can free up our instructor at the high school. And I think that instructor, we can provide them, we can get a little principals of construction down there as well for weighted funding and that type of thing for our kids. Successes, unfortunately and fortunately, we still had 31 kids advance from district and area and Skills USA to state. Unfortunately, they weren't able to go, it was shut down. So we're looking for this year to be a big success in Skills USA. We've got our new construction teacher that's on board. Ready to set teach is on board to do some. We got our new cosmetology teacher that's ready to go. Of course, Mr. Blake. We got a few more wanting to dive in and get involved in that, so that's a good thing. FFA had a tremendous start to the year last year. Unfortunately, the spring got cut off short. We weren't able to finish it up. Through our judging contests and stock shows. As y'all talked, a good thing there earlier, we had one tremendous East Montgomery County Fair this past week and weekend. Some data, we had 20 grand in reserves from homemaking through livestock. 74 of the 131 auction slots were Splendoras, so it was extremely well. I don't have auction numbers yet. I have heard rumor that before add-ons, it was 410,000 for live auction. That seems a little high. Because normally we have about 100 something in add-ons, so that goes well over 500. I hope it's right. But through midway through the sale, those of y'all were there, it stayed pretty solid. And all y'all that have been involved, you know, the add-ons are crazy, and it's hard to keep up with, you know, what went on. But it was a tremendous show, and I'm going to commend my ag teachers as well. I mean, the camaraderie between that group that's there now is unreal. I love it. I mean, they're all about kids. So we're excited about that. CT certifications, we're down by 150 or so due to COVID. In the spring, it was normally we backload the certifications. COVID hit, and it just, you know, some of them, those bunch of the OSHA ones and whatnot didn't occur. I've tasked my staff now, we're going to front load more if we can to the fall and spread it out, but we're not caught in this predicament again, where we start getting some of those certifications early. Some of them we're not able to because of age requirements or hour requirements. It's still going to be springtime, but we're still having students come in and finish up their, like their cosmetology. They were delayed forever. They're now starting to be able to do it. Our CNA certifications, I mean, they're still coming in from last spring and finishing those certifications up, as well as our vet assistant certs. I mean, we're allowing those kids to come back. So even if they graduated, we're contacting them, and we're still footing the bill for that and getting those guys the certifications they need. Hopefully all of them are coming by and doing it, but we're going to front load it and spread it out through the year is all we can do, and try to make sure that this doesn't happen again, where our kids can still get that. And fortunately, our sophomore, juniors, those certs, they're still able to get them. It's our seniors that we really missed out on, and hopefully we didn't miss that many. Culinary Arts catered over 40 events before shutdown. So that's pretty good. I foresee as soon as we open back up and roll, it's going to get crazy again. I know they're working hard, so that program's still growing and doing good. Some concerns we had talked about in the meeting, and I'm sure y'all hear it, is maintaining and recruiting new CT staff when needed, and then the growth. Naturally, we're going to look for an auto body instructor, hopefully first of the year, or whenever they give me the go-ahead, to get one hired, at least get through the process and do some interviewing. So we got that and recruit. making sure we provide the essential programs for our students, making sure we're staying up to date with what Texas Workforce Commission and whatnot, what's valued in our area as well as other areas. And then just maintaining a quality education process for remote learning. And fortunately, my staff is crazy happy that 100% is coming back next week. That's coming in person. It is a struggle for remote for my guys, you know, that doing the hands-on, some of the hands-on courses and getting those kids to dive in and do it. I mean, it's a struggle to get the kids to check in. So we're working at it. My staff's working extremely hard. That's a concern that they have. We all have. I mean, here's what it is. So if y'all have any other further questions, yes, ma'am.
But first, before I ask my question, I was going to say and just reiterate that Alan spoke to this and you did as well. It has been, the climate's different, I can see, and I'll just commend, I have yet to lay eyes on Mr. Wilson. I don't know what he looks like. I couldn't tell you who he is.
He's what looked like a kid.
But I will say that he's been my home. He came and checked out our animal and worked with Honor and so forth. So, I mean, very, he seems very personal. My husband's made several comments, positive feedback on just how well he's been working and working with the kids and kind of going to Jason's point too. All those kids are all there on that steamer. Then my other question is, what is the wildlife course?
What is the wildlife course?
Yeah, what is that?
Wildlife and ecology, they'll do hunter certification in there and just talk about general wildlife and ecology and environmental impacts and different types of animals. Jobs and whatnot.
There's like unicorn or something like that.
They'll talk about that. Any jobs in the wildlife industry, ecology, fisheries, things like that. That's what it is. We've had it in high school. We moved it down really for funding, and it frees up some of the high school pathways. But looking at it now, and the type of students we have, I think I can move the principals down there. Those kids can rock and roll and be competitive and get after it. And that's just a tribute to our students.
Now, we always talk about growing and keep adding, but I know we touched a little bit earlier in the year about strategic planning. Are there some of these things that we feel like maybe there's a better direction or some of that?
Good question. We mentioned that in our agenda meeting that, you know, we're going to evaluate that hard this year. What's working? What do we need to do to adjust? And as Susan and I talked, some of these things Lone Star's offering, if we develop it through there, if the pathway is large enough for our program, say, and you'll see numbers like Sayre County, I'll just say it. The numbers for us are low. Now, what's the viability if we keep that number up? Or those students interested in that, we're able to get them that level one certification through Lone Star. Yeah, it's something
that. I'm going in a different direction even. I mean, I see some things that they got good numbers. But I think when you dig into it, for a design, I know a lot of kids enjoy that. There's only one flower shop in town.
That's for fine art credit. That's where you get it.
I get that. So, and most of them take it because they need a fine art credit. But are there other options that would both get that fine art credit and be something that's of more value to them down the road?
Not in CTE.
We've talked about that.
No graphic design or nothing like that.
That's where you see the inflated numbers there. If it was just a, I don't know, that instructor's extremely good. So, I mean, I think she recruits kids left and right, but, yeah.
Oh, that's a joy. I mean, yeah. Not knocking it. I don't know how much long-term value it provides.
In that sense, to break it down, that's kind of why we don't have a horticulture pathway. Student interest in our area. I mean, we do still have timber, but besides a few loggers and the truck drivers, where does that go? So,
what's theirs will be wiped out here.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, I agree. But we are looking at strategic management of things and adjusting when need and for growth. Let me just say, when we add get auto body online, that's going to pull from something until we get big growth. I mean, it's going to pull from somewhere.
with that said, you know, I appreciate the numbers because it tells a lot in your enrollment per class. Is there any way that we could get, you know, don't have to pick a day right now, but here soon, over the, you know, we're asking for this over in our athletics and every other program, can we get this a 3-year breakdown, see where the trends are? And that would help us, you know, just to see what's actually happening. Because like you say, you know, when you put one online, it's pulling from the other, you know, just so we can see what's going on.
Yeah, we can see somebody that's harder skyward.
The cost,
still pulling that out of Texas.
The exam cost, is that on the students or is that on the?
Yeah, all the initial exam costs are on us. The initial exam, if they fail, it's on them. We don't cover it yet.
Well, I know that that's donated, the welding exam.
That's changing.
Okay. I was kind of
wondering. We're going a different route.
You're going to start.
We're going to go ahead and we're going to keep that relationship with Kennedy Fab and let them do that, but we're going to go for that D11 and D91 certification fee. Okay. Which they're getting the AWS certification through them, but we're going to, for accountability, and we've got to do that. D11 and D91.
Yeah. Just to clarify, you're asking for like a fee schedule for anything that we charge now.
Well, I'm looking at his fee schedule, his cost of exams. I was just seeing who the bonus was on that to.
Initial cost of us, and then cost tied to you. We talked about
that. Did you end up picking the fees up on that?
We started with the freshman kids and building it because your junior and seniors already had it. So,
we haven't talked about that in here. So,
yeah, I don't remember if we talked about that at our gym or the gym meeting. This year, I started picking up like the kits for cosmetology and purchasing the kits. And we're starting with the freshman coming, the intro course, should say freshman, the intro course where I bought all the kits and it cost those kids nothing.
What would that cost?
That's $375, $360
Per kid. How many kids you have?
We bought 27 this year. But like, and my plan was to go ahead and buy everybody's, but like I said, the juniors and seniors already purchased their kit, the Cosmo 1 and 2 kids. So they've already got them. So we're going to phase it in, kind of like we do anything, phase it in and then eventually, and still have that option for kids. Hey, if you want to buy your own kit, you're more than welcome to it, and then you leave with it. Now, the difference here is they don't leave with anything.
But they have the option.
We can still purchase at a higher price.
Can they buy it on the women's option when we get rid of it to you?
Buy it not from us. I imagine it'll be pretty wore out. But they have it. It's still a cheaper price for us.
Over 2 years old before hip limbs.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm saying.
Pick it all up for $5.
Within 2 years, those kids, it won't cost them anything to get them. That's pretty good. That's good. One of few districts out of the call that does it.
Overall, that's about $500 invested.
By your senior year, it's going to be closer to $5,800. That they don't have to invest. And then you add your testing. I mean, you're $1,000 per student by senior year.
How many students do you have to pay in $1,000?
If you have to pull it up, I want to say there's 20 something intros and. Yeah, I might be able to pull up. It's just got
25 checks, max at first group.
Yeah.
We're pretty much
cleaning that up.
I was glad to see Boston's Tech on there with King McCall, with Mozart and Wood. But what's the feasibility of that ever happening? Because that's all the way over off the way, right?
We had a student that was interested last week, a freshman. And then between this freshman and sophomore year, you found love and something else. But it's going to be a dedication that they are not going to be able to do anything else in school once they make that decision.
But as we look at outcomes, like money, with cosmetology, I think what the average income is about $25,000. I mean, I know it depends. You can make lots of money, you can make not very much. With process students that are graduating with an associate's degree, and that's like upwards of $80,000 without overtime. So when we look at what the outcome is, and I know you can't, it's really hard to build up that interest in a kid trying to tell them what it is if their parent doesn't do it. So, you know, and I know there's not that big of an interest because it's probably too far to drive to the chemical plants from Sonora and have a lot of people there. But it's just one of those areas as we talk about having that curriculum of encouraging and having kids, you know, giving them a curriculum about careers so they can see how much they make and see if it's interesting because they're working with computers and, you know, mechanics at the same time. So I think a lot of our kids would really enjoy that.
Yeah, and
I just didn't know it was feasible to drive that far.
It is. I mean, we went through the option of it. I mean, like I said, it's a choice that they're going to make. I mean, they're not going to be able to be in ag. They're not going to be able to be
probably
athletics. I mean, but a student at that point, that's what their ultimate goal is. What's good is we've got that option. They've got that option.
It's an associate degree, so we offer 1301 here and some of the other courses that they need to complete that associate. So
they
wouldn't have to go just for the practical stuff, huh?
Applied science. I mean, that's what most of them require.
But in this case with Process Tech, it's a full associate. I'm pretty sure. I mean,
them would be gone. I believe Susan correct me wrong, but they'll be gone either morning or afternoon.
Yeah,
completely.
It's a ton of time.
And then what happens is they come back. They'll, you know, once they graduate, they'll have that summer through December. And then they'll get their certification. I know it's at least summer. I'm pretty sure it's all the way to December to be able to wrap up.
Anyway, it's interesting. It may take a while to build, but it really is good money.
And we're going to make a valiant effort. Susan and I are in discussions about recruiting and when to hit, who to hit, how to hit. I mean, we're trying to adapt and adjust, do more than what we've had.
And y'all, never mind.
Tremendous change since I've having it internal just gives a lot more accountability, I guess, and I don't know, a lot more buy-in.
For sure.
And, of course, you know, my wife's a special ed teacher, and she said she always liked to say that special ed students are like your canaries in the coal mine. Whatever they're experiencing, you can bet other kids are, but they may not express it sometimes. So it's a population that I think we always have to be aware of, and sometimes we have to speak out for them when they don't speak out on the house.
So yes.
Thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you, guys. I mean, we're very supportive in this district, so that helps us. Did you have any?
No.
What kind of issues do you see in the future?
In what regard?
Well, I guess because we
are. You want to start with my list now?
Because that's always good for us to know, to look forward to planning and finances, and because providing these services are not cheap. I mean, we could see some of what it costs us for just behavioral kids. And I've seen it where one child moving out of the classroom can really make a huge difference to everyone else's education in that classroom. So I'm not saying everyone should be moved out that way, but I know it's something we have to look at as we grow.
Unfortunately, we're seeing more and more kids, younger and younger, who have severe and violent behavioral concerns. And, you know, some of it is just a matter of, like the candidate you spoke earlier, they've experienced trauma. Some of it's, you know, kiddos, because they haven't learned what school's like. They've never had demands that have been placed on them. And I've talked to some of the parents, too, especially when they come in, because they think, you know, something's wrong with my kid because they're getting in school and, you know, they're having these violent outbursts, but that's not something that they're familiar with at home. And the expectations are very different. And unfortunately, a lot of times we hand our kiddos tablets and phones and things like that. So even the simple task of cleaning your room and being held accountable to that and not having the TV on, you know, that feels very different when you go from kind of an environment where you don't have those kinds of expectations, or you're allowed to do it with some type of preferred activity, and then you get in a kinder classroom and you're on a schedule, and when, you know, my little world is turned upside down, and I don't have the language to tell you what that means, and not because I may not even know. And so, you know, some of those kids, it's as simple as that, and we have to kind of teach them the process of playing school and support them through that. And then some kiddos, I mean, we are seeing a significant increase in students who are getting labeled with, some of the more low incident disabilities, like emotional disturbance. In this district, we're seeing a pretty big increase in students with autism as well, and some pretty profound autism. We also have a really big pocket still of speech kiddos, and we're working really hard to get those kiddos in, get them seen, and get them out. I like to say, when I'm talking with the speech department, we kind of have some lingers. By the time they get to junior high, we really want those kiddos to have those skills and to have moved on. But unfortunately, a lot of our kiddos were only seen once a week or so prior. And so they really weren't able to really develop that skill and develop it quickly. And so, you know, research supports that speech and language and reading go really hand in hand. And so our philosophy is to kind of get them in. You know, they need to be seen 2 or 3 times a week at 3 and 4 years old, and we're going to do that so that they can have the skills that they need to set them up for success as quickly as possible in school. So we do have a pretty big speech population. That is something that we are definitely addressing and working on, but I think it's the right thing to do.
With that being said, so my daughter has been in speech for a little while. And last year, when she was doing her online speech track, it was really beneficial for us to hear. It gave us tools to work with. So I'd like to see if that's possible, which I mentioned in the agenda review, but to move forward with that, like if that's a possibility to give parents these tools to work with. Because I'm not an expert in this. I know she has a problem, but how to get her to. So that'd be great.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we learned from that experience is we've had many parents like me say, I learned so much from being able to watch the speech pathologist or the occupational therapist give me the skills and those packets to work with our kids. So one of the things that we're going to try to do, and you know, it's prioritizing, but is to do like a parent support series. The other thing that you can do is when you're in the ARC meeting, you can request that the speech pathologist do like a remote lesson once in 3 weeks or twice in 9 weeks to help you kind of look at what skills she's working on and progress her through that. So once she has her annual ARC meeting, every kid is going to have a face-to-face instructional plan as well as a remote instructional plan. But what you can do is
in the home. So when we offer parent support or in-home training, and then, you know, some staff members get weary about going to the home and things like that, but this has really opened up a huge avenue for us to be able to kind of do better wraparound services and people be more accepting of it and seeing the benefit of it. So that is definitely something that as we prioritize, and we're going to continue to do that and hopefully be able to keep some of that, those things up. But it is definitely something.
When you talk about, I've seen an increase in students with a lot of frustration levels. And I keep questioning how much of our curriculum, and not that we develop the curriculum, obviously we're just taking on the teachings, but as we continue to push the curriculum farther down, kindergarten used to be about just learning how to go through school. Now we're trying to teach kids how to read in kindergarten. And it's obviously going to create a higher frustration level. Do you see that as a part of that? I mean,
we do. It's just kind of the nature of things. And that's why we really, sometimes people get frustrated with like, the special education evaluations take so long or you require so much. But it's important to know, is it a true disability or is it something that's environmental and we just need to get the kid of time, you know? And so to tease that out, it's not an easy task to do. And, the more information that we have, the better off we can be in making that decision and making sure that we're making those decisions appropriately.
The level of attrition can really push. Yeah. We keep pushing it down and then wonder why kids are frustrated.
Like, let your kids sleep. So you can still hear them.
I think that's a good point you hit on this. So I was talking to one of our principals today. Just these kids spent the last 4 or 5 months just, you know, sitting in front of the TV or getting a tablet or whatever. Now that's been taken away. And you know, we're seeing, I think that was what I was saying about Shannon. You know, that was really timely because now we're starting to see
absolutely
some of these behaviors now that we're back in routine. Like, the honeymoon's over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And being, oh, we're back in school. Now they're being held to, you know, some standards. And I see the title, you know, iPad. Mm-hmm. You know, I can take away the next time. I want iPad. It's 4 bucks. It's almost like addiction.
It is. And it's easy to do that. I mean, my son is a parent. You know, I look back and, you know, I have a background in behavior and I'm like, good grief, Jennifer. Who's training who here?
Jennifer, did you say that cases of autism have increased?
Yes, ma'am. It's right now our third leading disability. It should be lower than that, but I think that again, it's just something that more people are aware, and we're seeing an increase in severity.
So, any idea of why? Just because
autism is a great environmental impact.
There's a billboard sign, and the light's still on.
We also have a high increase of students everywhere. We also have a high increase of students with an intellectual disability as well, which are students that have a significant and profound cognitive impairment.
So you were saying environmental.
There's a direct correlation between number of autism students and the environmental impact of where they were born and where they were.
So what would be the environmental impact in this area?
Well, you've got more people moving from Pasadena out here.
Yeah,
or
process to
We also have several sets of siblings who, the siblings have autism, which is unique. I mean, earlier in my career, I would say that was very, very rare. And in fact, I can think of 3 or 4 off the top of my head right now of students that are in district or have been in district that, you know, the siblings have, both of them have been diagnosed.
I'm going to ask a really dumb question. I'm so sorry to ask this. But it is a doctor's diagnosis, right? I mean, it is. They're not just stated, I don't use one label, I hate that, but they're not stated to have autism without having a doctor's diagnosis. I know that's a dumb question.
Thank you. Yes. So there's an educational diagnosis and there's a medical diagnosis. So we have lots of kids who may have high functioning autism, or, you know, previously known as Asperger's, who may be able to function within the academic world, you know, fine. Maybe they just need some supports as far as some social skills, or maybe that's something that they developed when they were younger. Now, as they've aged, they don't need that or require that support. support anymore. So in that situation, that could be a student who has a medical diagnosis of autism but doesn't have an educational diagnosis of autism. And then reversely, we get students who oftentimes, you know, we'll get a child find where a kiddo comes in at 3 and that parent has never put the child in daycare and the student, the doctor hasn't diagnosed the student and we diagnose the student as a student with autism. So, I mean, like, I'm a licensed specialist in school psychology and then we also have 2 others that are on staff. And so we are trained to be able to do that. But it doesn't, just because you have one doesn't automatically mean that you have the other. Just like I can't say professionally, how does autism impact the student medically? I can tell you how it impacts them educationally. And vice versa, the doctor likes to be, you know, to tell us how it's going to impact them educationally. But they don't really know how that impacts them. So we have to come in and say, well, this is how this is going to impact them educationally. And most of the time we can work together and you know, kind of agree on the diagnosis. But we have lots of students who have a diagnosis of autism who we don't actually carry because it doesn't meet the need for them to be able to be successful.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question, Jackie, because I think so many times with special ed students, if a kid has a physical handicap, it's obvious, right? You can typically see something. But when it's the cognitive handicaps or challenges, it's so much harder for adults, for teachers a lot of times, to recognize that that kid doesn't brush her hair because she's sensitive and it's different for her than it is for a normal kid. And that's often, a lot of times, you know, I get to hear these stories firsthand, but where teachers don't even quite understand that, hey, she's like that for a reason. You've got to understand that before you just say, hey, kid, you need to brush your hair. So,
thank you.
Next up, transportation report.
I also answered questions beforehand, so we do have all questions. And you also, everyone should have a supplement that shows the 2019-2020 numbers.
And thank you for putting on there your, you know, worries or needs. That's helpful, I think, so we get to kind of know this.
I'd imagine if we move forward with this print, the handle with care, that would be very important for people to be trained with that. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they're the first ones to see the kids.
It's very important.
Thank you for saying that, because that was something that I was thinking of too.
But I don't think that should impact it, because that's coming from above to police. Well, and then so the drivers would talk. You know, drivers would talk about CPS, and they would do, of course, just like any educator. Because that's what the trauma is happening at home. And then you know, the parents are involved. So I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to disagree with you, but
no. But I had some questions written down with that. I mean, we're not reporting to law enforcement at all, right? With this program, right?
No.
I mean, not law enforcement, right? It's coming from.
I got the idea that it's coming from.
Is
but
there
if a teacher in a classroom notices something.
But from law enforcement to the district, just as a, hey, heads up, this kid's acting weird, you know, have a little bit of care, not in specifics or anything.
Or even that there was an arrest the night before, there was a family emergency or something
right,
like that.
Right.
That's what.
So is there, do we currently document cases like?
That obligation hasn't changed, I think.
I don't know much detail.
We have to report to CPS?
Not that, let's say a child showed a case of some, you know, a sign of trauma in the way she described. Do we do anything to say, you know, this kid's having a bad day or a bad spell, and then 6 weeks later is doing it again, and then, you know, you may forget that,
But there's an obligation.
Yeah.
There's an obligation for any educator if a child tells them that they've been abused to call directly.
I'm not to that severe.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, there are case I mean, that's what he's saying. If there's an outcry to a counselor, then the counselor makes that case.
But it has to go to the counselor. I mean, is there at some point where if that teacher's just don't maybe not necessarily feel the need that it needs to be CPS, but you know, see what's going on.
Is there a track record that takes place trying to say leading up to where you might be performing CPS?
Yeah, it's
not so
competition
on
the I'm a deal man. I think those alerts would end up still not only the teacher, because bus drivers are the first ones and the last ones to see that. I mean, there's some times where kids come in, they're sad on the bus because they've had something bad at home. They get on the bus and they're happy because they're with their friends.
Yeah.
The teachers don't see that mentality whenever that when a kid gets on the bus, when a kid gets off of the bus, when it's anxiety. Being with friends, they're going to be good. Bus drivers get to read the barometer of where the kid is. So, you know, if we get the handle a care alert, everything is fine with the teacher, but the bus driver knows, hey, yeah, this kid was. So, I like to, if we're going to implement this alert, it still needs to go to the bus drivers because they see them first and last.
We've had bus drivers that have reported different things to CPS directly. If they have a question about something, they come to me, and I tell them by law, you have to report that. So, we have a number, they call them, they follow up. Sometimes, actually, while we were out in the pandemic, we received a letter from the health, you know, Department of Health and Safety and to give to the driver that it was reported and that it had a case number and everything. Of course, we don't ever know what the outcome is, but people don't realize that the kids sit right behind the bus driver sometimes, and sometimes there is just them and the bus driver, and so there's a lot of times that kids report things that happen at home that are good and that aren't so good. So they do hear a lot of stuff.
And to your point, to me, I guess if we're going to implement this, are we looking at it more holistically? Where, I mean, the bus driver might know things happen that law enforcement didn't know and the teacher doesn't know.
Right.
So, and vice versa. I mean.
Yeah, but those are two different things. I mean, what you're talking about is it goes on, it happens now. I mean, I can tell you it happens all the time. And it's handled through the counseling office or directly, you know, directly with CPS. But what she was talking about was there's a way that we find that's really, we don't have that option right now, where we're hearing from the police officers or from the police those things happen outside of school that have no association with us at all. We never find out about those things, but that's important information. So you see, it's kind of two different things.
I agree, but also, what I'm asking is, do we internally have that process?
That's what I was asking.
Like an informal process of
if a bus driver knows something going on with the kid,
Yes.
Our teachers find that out.
Yes.
I don't report it directly to the teacher. If something happens that's extreme, I tell them immediately to report it to CPS.
But within district.
But within district,
yes.
No. Unless something is questionable, report it over to the principal or something like that. If I've heard something. I've actually told Dr. Burke before in a text message, if I found out that someone's father had died through the night or something like that, someone had died or whatever, and I've told him before that, you know, and then I'm sure he reported it on. But if I know for a fact something has happened, then yes, I report it to the principal. I don't know who your teacher is.
I know what you're asking.
We share information about the communication.
But not only when you're talking to you, because I've in the past before working against one or I've heard from bus drivers, the information comes down that channel. Like the bus driver sees the difference in the kid, you know, or maybe they said, I've got this bruise, and that comes through, maybe from the front office, and it comes through the central location of the counselor's office.
Are there trainings on sex traffic? For if the driver starts to notice something that's, kind of along that lines too, if the kids are talking about stuff that's happening at their house or things like that. So we've done those type of trainings at transportation so that, because they do see things out there, a lot. lot of the, and we used to do it several years ago, but we haven't done it where we've taken the new teachers out and they've kind of seen where the students live at and everything. So we haven't done that in a couple of years, but when we have done it, it kind of, the teacher puts an eye to exactly where these kids live and their living arrangements on the outside. Of course, they don't know what's happening on the inside if things are hidden on the inside, but...
Well, sometimes bus drivers know if there's no running water or no electricity because they see the kids come on and, you know, and so they know that before anyone else does.
Right. So maybe the answer to y'all's question, Dr. Burton, get with Mr. Brock is the one to see if and or develop
some sort of
system.
Yeah. I could definitely say because when I was here, it happened. But there are holes in it? Probably there are.
I'm just going back to the alert thing. So when we talked about it earlier at the beginning of the meeting, police hear of something that happened the night before. They send an email that says handle care. And it just alerts all the teachers. Say, hey, there was something traumatic happened with this kid or this family last night. Handle it with care. That whole funnel goes to the transportation department as well, because they need to see it. They need to know to handle this.
You gotta be careful with that. Jason, I mean, I'm just saying, confidentiality, you never know. If you, more people that you don't know, somebody say, hey, tell me about what happened, and that person isn't really, you know, they just want the curiosity. So, I would say let the experts kind of figure that part out.
I think it's got to be a process. It really probably won't go to each teacher, and it won't go to each bus driver directly.
Right.
It's got to kind of filter out.
Yeah, it's got to go this way.
Maybe something we might want to revisit with Shannon.
My next step, I already texted Dr. Barnes a little bit, so maybe our phone person will have her set up a meeting with Shannon and ask him these questions that you guys are
talking about.
She's helping develop this in our county, and the other school districts who are on board with it, surely they have some of the same concerns.
I had another two though. We're big and you see the differences they're capturing kids' hearts, but what kind of training for that does the bus driver get?
Well, we did the winning culture when it was about an episode. And then also after the first year, I asked Mr. Broussard if he would come over to transportation. And so 2 years ago at our in-service, he had a group of teachers that came over and they were helping the drivers with questions and all of that.
That's the stuff that sets us apart, even when we're saying we're national showcases. You know, top to bottom, that the thing. And again, I'm big on that because, and I said it before, my aunt was a bus driver for, you know, my grandpa was too. This was a long time ago. But I've heard stories of situations that bus drivers unfortunately see. They're the first ones and last ones. So they get a different insight on things that teachers don't.
I guess I do have just one question. In response to one of the questions from the engineering team, what are your concerns about the future, concerns is that you have? And you said growing out the facility. Do you mean like office space in the facility or even parking space?
We have two restrooms. And in those two restrooms, we have one toilet for the gentlemen and two for the ladies. And at push times, those are bad, for the drivers coming in trying to hurry up, get their business because they don't know when they're going to be able to come back to the restroom. Just our facility, we did do a build out, which is very nice for a dispatch office, but it cut into our driver's lounge area, which at this time we're not really using it to its full. The parking lot, the employee parking lot, we were able to stretch that out behind the skating rink over the summer, so that has helped us a little bit, but there's really no more space in the tents to put any more buses, and as the district is starting to grow, we're starting to have that need of the buses and everything, and so the mechanical bays, eventually we're going to need another mechanic, we need another bay, you know, that type of stuff. So it's everything.
How can we get a report on what that looks like and the cost and
this one thing
from the plan study.
But how do we, it sounds like.
Very much on our.
That's the biggest factor in what happens on that side of town, and it's what happens to what's over there already. And that facility is a big piece of it. Do you relocate on a different piece of property? And that was part of the discussion that came up with the 2090 property that we ended up not acting on. Or do you take in the land, for instance, the where the tennis courts are, and then all the way back to the sawmill and the skate center, and that become all transportation for transportation and warehouse, and then that leaves everything else for future expansion for the construction facility. So that's part of the discussion that's been going on for many moons, but it's especially as the rumors that we're hearing now that TA may decide to make us foot the bill with $15 billion worth of unbalance available in districts statewide. We might want to amp up what we're doing with our fund balance before they act on something like that. That is some of the talk that may come out of the next session, which likely we've done a good job of allocating a good chunk of it in the last, this budget and the previous budget.
Here's one thing I keep saying about bus transportation facilities and like warehouse facilities and even maintenance facilities. You know, those are easy services as far as support services, as far as sewer and water. Those are easy things. Those are easy challenges to overcome.
Yep.
So when we start talking about land, it opens up the possibilities of site
location. It's all
that's right.
Anything else?
We know it's a 15.
Transportation, the director.
How big of an acreage footprint would that be for?
There's a lot under in the 15-acre range. Yeah. That's what we're hearing from Margaret talking about.
I'm doing old ones.
But you don't have to develop.
Right. Just the development of it is over time, but the newness of the facility has to be done for has to be built originally, right. Just like the school for a future expansion. They need 3 toilets. But they do rent those on a trailer too, so I mean,
they've been asking for some side ticket for Friday night trips.
Anything else for our transportation director?
Thank you.
All right, curriculum management plan presentation.
All right, so at our review, you asked us to give you kind of an update, especially on the remote learning. And so that's kind of what I've provided you here. So we'll just kind of go through. This data here is as of last Wednesday, 3:00, right, Katie? We were waiting on these numbers because kind of Arlene was getting the numbers from all the registrars last week. And so if you can see here, as a district currently, we're at 74% with on-site, 26% with remote learners. And so then I broke it down by campus for you. And I know that some of these numbers have already shifted. For instance, I know for sure that the junior high has a higher number of on-site. The last I spoke with Kent, it was at 72%. So we do have kids coming back every day. Diana, and talking with her and making the decision to go all on site starting on Monday, she said she actually kind of had a little bit of the opposite where some parents weren't quite sure that they wanted their kids to go. But what we do is probably if we go by the trend that we've seen across the district for the elementary and the junior high, that will probably change pretty rapidly because all of a sudden, I really feel like it's because of the protocols that we've put in place for the safety guidelines that we've done. And we've had real success with it, that parents are feeling better about sending those kids back. And so slowly but surely we're getting them back. Because I don't know if you know, but when we kind of started, we were really at a 60-40, and at one campus we were at a 50-50. So these numbers are really showing the down by grade level. So, Katie, if you want to go to the next slide for me. So you can get an idea of what it is by grade level. I think the most surprising thing for us this year is historically we have large numbers of pre-K, meaning that we have our pre-K classes are anywhere from, I would say, about 22 to 28, and they're just not bringing them, and we're not sure why. We have made an effort to do another kind of pre-K roundup, so there's been information that's gone out about we really want you to come back. Do you need help with registration? We're here to support you, so I'm anxious to see if that's made a difference.
You're not the only ones with that problem. Even your Head Starts are having this problem.
Oh, so that's kind of like, it's kind of interesting, right?
So they're just plain not enrolled.
They're just not enrolled.
Yeah, they're not
enrolled. Well, you have more parents at home.
Yeah. Right, it's not a required, so they're just staying home.
And even like when you look at the, you know, the on-site versus the remote, there's very few remote, you know, comparatively speaking, when you look across the other numbers. So you can kind of just see the numbers. That's, again, these were as of last Wednesday. So the next one is 7th through 12th grade. Then the other thing we did was we received some feedback from our campus administrative leadership teams. We are going to do a survey. Dr. Burke and Lydette and I have a meeting with Panorama. We're going to go ahead and use their services to do the survey because it'll give us some really good reports back on remote learning and Canvas. So as parents of the district, you should be getting a survey from Panorama shortly. We're going to also survey the teachers and also survey the students. I anticipate some negative feedback from that
because
we hear, you know, I know it's all going to be okay, but we have to know so that that's how we can, you know, hopefully support them the best that we can. But the big things trending for the survey, the feedback that we got back from the campuses, is all about Canvas. And within Canvas, what they're saying is that there's some differences among teachers on the expectations. Is there a way that we can streamline what those expectations as a district might look like? So that's the so Nathan and Laura and Susan are working together, and they're supposed to have a report to me this week, and then we're going to meet with campus administrators and let them know some of the things that we need to do as a district to make sure that when parents, if they have a second grader and a fifth grader and a seventh grader, there's some similarities across campus that they can expect. But we still want to make sure that teachers have some of the flexibility and freedom to be able to be as creative as they want to be within it, within those kind of expectations that we'll set at the district. So some of the things is maybe the possibility of creating a landing page or a home page, if you will. We did have one campus that did that. They had success with it. So campus can create a landing page so that it kind of has some of the same information. A week at Glance, there was a lot of feedback that parents in particular really like that week at Glance so that they can plan accordingly with their remote kiddos. We need to provide some professional development with teachers on creating your assignments in Canvas on what we call tiles versus list. But there's also a way that kids can go in and change that setting. So it's just easier. What happens is they do the list and the teachers don't archive assignments after a time. Then it becomes this overwhelming list of things that's hard to find. And then sometimes some of the assignments can kind of get tucked up under. But if you click on a tile and it's categorized by week at a glance, then I've got, this is the week of September 21st through whatever Friday is, the 28th, or the 28th. It is Friday.
25th.
Thank you, 25th. And then I've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and I can click on that and know what my assignments are. So those are the things we're talking about, trying to make it easier to navigate for kids and parents. Skyward and One Roster, we have uncovered lots of little nuances through that. A lot of it has been fixed. And it's just little things. Some of it was on us, and some of it was on Skyward because they had to develop new kind of little program or pieces that they had to do to help us support the need that we needed here. So Buddy has worked very hard as well as Arlene and Lodette and everybody trying to make sure that all of that kind of gets worked out. They weren't playing nice with one another. That's the best way to say it. So we had to teach them both how to play nice with one another so that our kids and our parents and our students have what they need. The other thing in the challenge that we've heard from all the campuses is the challenge of being both a remote teacher and an on-site teacher. It is very challenging, and it takes extra planning time and preparation. So we're trying to figure out ways that we can help support those teachers. One thing they want is resources. The other thing we're talking about, I'm going to meet with the principals, with Dr. Barnes, is the possibility of having remote planning sessions where we can pull the teachers off just to have time just to plan, like units of study that are coming up, so giving them a little extra time in the planning process in order to help to support that. And then attendance, we have, attendance is huge, and attendance is very different, and it's not like attendance that they've ever taken before. All the guidelines in attendance are from TEA. So basically, in a nutshell, teachers have to take attendance twice a day. That's just the kind of the way it is. So you can be, basically it defaults and everybody's present. And so they go in and on-site learners, they just mark that they're absent. But if I'm a kid that was absent because they called in, and I go ahead and do my assignment prior to 11:59, the teacher can go back in the next day prior to 3:30 and count them present. So TEA is giving us that benefit that we can count those students present if they do the work before midnight. Does that make sense? So we've tried to come up with several different ways that we can think of to help kind of for teachers to expedite attendance, because the word we're getting is it's taking them a long time. I think that's two reasons. One is because of the way we now have to do it according to the state of Texas, and they're not used to it. So I'm hopeful that once they get used to the whole new process that it is going to speed up for them. But the other is we came up with a couple of ideas that's being shared with teachers on how it might speed up the process for them. So I gave you a little bit of extra information there on attendance. I can tell you that Arlene and Wendeth have worked tirelessly on attendance to try to make it as clear as possible. They have written some procedures for teachers. They've gone around and they've talked to the faculty to help kind of bring clarity to the whole process and the new way we have to do it and answer questions. It's just different and it's new. And so that's the hard part there. Y'all have any questions on that so far? No?
So you were talking about the differences in Canvas, and just you gave the example of second, fifth, and seventh grade, I think. But something I just saw today also is maybe teachers are communicating, and I'm no fault because my gosh, I can't even imagine what they're doing right now. But maybe they're not communicating the same as one another. And here's my example: pre-cal teacher called me today and said, "Hey, I noticed on recess or such, and I also noticed that she's really only doing about 50% of her assignments. She's only doing better in the day." So I asked, I said, "Have you seen that more across the board?" Or she goes, "Well, you know, maybe so." And so I went downstairs and said, "Hey, Honor, are you not doing her assignments?" She goes, "Mom, they said first, third, fifth, seventh, I'm only supposed to log in on these days. So I'm not supposed to have an assignment on Tuesday and Thursday. I'm only supposed to have them on Monday, Wednesday, and every other Friday." So I'm just questioning or wondering if maybe there's not a common understanding amongst teachers as well as between the grades there.
I think that's a great point, Jackie. And so I can take that to Kent and Diana to make sure that there is a common understanding and that there's a common communication that's going out to the parents.
And I applaud Honor for saying it. She goes, "But then, Mom, what will happen next week when we go back? Even if I only have the last year, I had class on Monday and Wednesday. If I have class on Monday and Wednesday, am I going to be expected to log in on Tuesday for that class as well?" And I was like, "That's a good question." I suggested that she email the teacher and find out. I don't know. But anyway, I just think that there might be also between teachers a difference in understanding and what the expectations are as well.
Especially at the secondary level. So that's a good point. So I will look into that, Ms. Jackie. And so thank you for bringing that up.
I just said it was today that she called 3:30. I'm sorry.
And it's funny, too, because Max has that saying. Especially because, you know, now we're, last week we had the fair, so he was going to go 2 days last week, but he's totally got lost because, not knowing, so, mean, there's that confusion that happens, and it's the same thing. He's been counted absent. He's like, I've checked Canvas, and it's the same thing. Not just being off, or Mr. Liston scolded him several times. Hey, you were absent yesterday. He goes, I was there. So, I mean, I feel bad for the struggle with him because I'm like, hey, you know. So, I want to scold Lance whenever I get a call from an art teacher or an ag teacher. And then when you talk to Lance, you're like, ooh. Okay, hang on, I wasn't supposed to. I would be confused too if I don't know where I'm supposed to go today.
Okay, going back to the first patient you had, the on-site versus remote, do you know where we stand with the other school districts? Has it, you stand that we're 26% on remote learners? What do you think some of the other school districts are? Are they kind of in the same comparison?
No, I actually think we're higher than most of the other school districts that I've been in contact with. So as far as my daughter's kid, my grandchild goes to Conroe, and the last time I asked her, they were at about a 64. Yeah. So I don't know. It's something that, Dr. Burke, I don't know if you've heard from any of your
colleagues. I think it's just varies on where you live, kind of what your demographic makeup is somewhat. I don't know. Last time I talked about to Chris Trotter, they were 50-50. They were close to it, and they're just right on the road. And I think, Livingston, I think, has a pretty high split of people on site. So I just think there's, you know, the closer you are to the city, probably you're going to have more kids to go around.
And I just asked Dr. Barnes about Cleveland. He said about 50-50.
Yeah, 364.
Yeah. When will we have no longer on higher than most of the semester, or is that?
Expect the model to change, though, to where we have dedicated
Yes.
Yes. So one of the things that we're going to work on, so Susan, Laura, Jennifer are six that are in Schlechting's Transformational Leadership, and so they've got their virtual leadership series, and we have to do a big project, and so we're going to do a long-term plan for remote learning for the district, so that at least it's going to be a great start to it, because it needs to look, I think, different, and we're learning every day through this whole process so that we do have better processes and, I guess, better routines and expectations through the remote learning. But I really believe, like, and this is just off the top of the cuff, is that it needs to be kind of like an application process, and it has to be a commitment for a year. Because going back and forth, guys, is tough.
Yeah.
I am not good. It's tough.
That's what I was going to ask you. The state, I thought the state allowed us to keep allow the face-to-face kids to go remote, but not the remote come back face-to-face until the grading period. I mean, that's what's in the state guideline.
I think we originally said that we wanted them to commit to every 9 weeks.
Right.
But eventually you want your babies back, and that's one of the reasons too why our numbers, because we have allowed them to come back.
Yes, because not everywhere is.
Yes.
So I know the original state guideline said that you have to give till the 9 weeks in order to come back, because it's pretty hard to accommodate, you know, all of that, and looking at maybe changing the whole master schedule at the 9 weeks because of who's coming back and who's leaving.
Some of them might have been, I mean, obviously, we're not going to say that.
Right,
and
that's what
we're saying.
The hardest issue, I think, is like, especially for people who say, well, I'm just going to stay home for these couple of days.
Yes.
That's the issue.
That is the biggest challenge.
I'm surprised we're allowing it to happen, but whatever works.
It's
right.
That it's being upheld in the state, though. You're not going to support us on that if you're not understanding. If we try to make that decision, they're not going to, if parents challenge that, they're not going to support us. I'm not having these districts and we're not challenging.
I think
you're saying that your challenge is far as telling you, no, you have to stay home. And you,
yeah, they're like, no. Yeah. You got to let back in. Right? The commissioner said that on the office.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about the original TA document that came across that held the parents to 9 weeks or whatever. It was 6 weeks, 9 weeks, whatever it was. And so I know that there are districts upholding that, and just whether the state backs them or not, it's kind of like, no, this is what the document says, so it's what we're doing. But
Yes. Lives Better that we have here. But that's the reason we want to do a long-term plan. So we're going to fill in that engagement design. So, I brought Susan in today, Mr. Allen, so we can talk about that one slide on financial literacy. And you can she has all the knowledge of financial literacy. Before she goes through the last slide, I just want to say that, and I do, I have an acknowledgement slide affirmation because I can't express enough how many people it's taking to make all of this work together. And it is just one incredibly exceptional team. All the way from Susan and Laura and Buddy and Jennifer and Lydette and Arlene. I can't tell you how many meetings we have come together, more than any, this year to talk about the challenges that we're faced and try to really drill down to what is the root cause, what can we control, what can we not control, and let's work on the things and focus on the things that we can control in order to better support our folks. And so I'm just saying all the way from Kroger and Kevin, and I mean, it's just everybody coming together. Dr. Barnes, we've got a team, brings a lot of great ideas and knowledge, and we just can't do it with everybody working together. And you guys need to be incredibly proud of the people that work in Splendora because they're awesome, and they are exceptional. So I just have to say that because it's what makes all of it worth it, having such a great team to work with.
Well, your dedication is good.
It's great.
5:26 a.m. I was looking at that.
Oh, that's right.
We're trying to get her to stop signing. I mean, that's not usually bad. I really like that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but you know, when you get to it, I see. That's a whole new level of appreciation.
Okay, I just wanted to provide an update on the personal financial literacy that we've been talking about for a while. So the last I spoke, we were going to go back and look at the economics curriculum because all students are required, all seniors for the most part, as graduating students, take economics. And it's a one semester course, so they're taking it this semester in the fall or they'll take it next semester in the spring back to back with the government typically. So what we're doing is talking with the two teachers that we have on campus that are teaching economics, and that is Coach Renault and Coach Pope. And we're kind of doing an audit of those TEKS that they're covering. I did put a link up there if you wanted to look at what the actual TEKS were. And that just means these are the things that are expected to be covered during an economics class. And that's copied straight from the TEA website. I only copied the personal financial literacy piece of the economics TEKS. And so I want to talk with the two teachers along with the dean of instruction and the humanities instructional specialist who is over the social studies department. And as we do that audit, I want to find out what projects those teachers are doing. What kind of assignments are they doing? Can we tweak that somewhat to make it a little more relevant for our graduating students? So we're just kind of in the process of doing that audit for those economics curriculum. Any questions on anything? I'll definitely report back when we get to a point that we can look at what projects we're going to do that might be different or what kind of assignments we're doing that might be different. I'll definitely bring all that back to you guys.
Are you looking at implementing any of the, I mean, I guess when you adjust your projects,
yes.
Part of the Dave Ramsey program?
So the Dave Ramsey, though, that's financial math. And the problem that we would get into if we did too much of it is some kids would be doing it twice. So we're just trying to be careful not to make them do the same things twice. So, yeah.
But what a small portion or something like that. This is a single semester class.
It is. It's a single semester course.
And they have two on the day Ramsey. Is that right?
It is. They're doing the financial literacy for Dave Ramsey, and then the other semester is entrepreneurship. For that year-long financial math course.
Right.
And then they also, in financial literacy, money matters at CT, I think that is what that course is. That is personal finance, too. Money matters.
Of course, we all have business management, right? That's part of it.
Yes.
I'm just, you know, trying to get where we don't miss. I see this, and I appreciate this.
Yeah. But
you don't want to miss anybody.
You don't want to miss anybody, and I'm still having to think about, because we still have kids in the early college that tend to take it dual credit economics, and they don't take it necessarily on our campus. And that's not all of them, but it's still, it could be 20-ish kiddos that I want to kind of think about how we can reach all of those kids. But the reason that we're even doing the audit is I want to make sure that the stuff that they're covering in that class is relevant for what they're going to need when they graduate. And that it's not just, let's cover this chapter in the economics textbook. And then you have a lot of words, but it's practical things that we're going to be covering. So that's what the audit is really for.
Adam, I couldn't hear what you were saying. What were you suggesting?
I can't hear you. I can't
bear with you. I couldn't hear what you were saying about money matters.
In the business pathway or in program study, they can take money matters, and that is personal finance, which Mr. Weld asked about. That's what those teams mainly are talking about, is personal finance. Okay. Finance.
Okay.
So they have that option to take that course.
Many students take that.
It should be on that list. No, it should be on it. It is admitted because it's late in that pathway. I like it more now. I'll just send it Kevin text saying I'm going to look into see if that could be possibly, possibly the junior high. Remember, the junior high students do that money matters.
I think in the audit.
And then we might catch
up. Yes, you're going to, because these are teaks and
yes,
kind of it, and they're supposed to be teaching that anyway.
Right.
I know that sometimes you might spend 3 days on this, but maybe through the audit you can kind of infuse it in the rest.
Yes. Because the thing about teaks that TEA provides is they just say, here's the list of things that you're supposed to cover. And they don't necessarily say, hey, spend 3 weeks on financial literacy, or spend 8 weeks on financial literacy. That's really all up to the teacher's interpretation many times for some courses. And so that's why doing, for me, helping that audit process is going to help me to kind of see what's going on now and then how we can tweak that to make it more relevant for our kids.
I guess that'd be my only question. Are the economics classes the only ones that it could be weaved into?
Other than we've got the financial math, so that's that fourth year math credit that some students are taking, and that's where the financial literacy with Dave Ramsey, we purchased that program, and then the principles of business financing, that's the only ones we've identified right now.
So it's looking better. So you have 54 money matters.
Oh, okay.
Accounting, so a couple of students, 83 in business.
I've looked at the table, but the question I would have is that we're really teaching the effects of compound interest in both directions.
I remember that. I honestly
didn't learn that until a college level course. Nobody ever broke down how you actually calculate an amortization schedule.
Right.
And it's a small thing.
No, it is.
Half a percent is a huge impact for 30-year minimum. I mean, so.
That's correct.
I was taught very well that lesson in high school. That was,
yeah.
Will always be there.
Yeah.
She did good.
All right.
Thank you.
Any questions on the construction update?
No. Did on the, just a quick.
Get a little weather delay, probably on a couple of slab floors this week.
Yeah.
Did you
figure out what
to draw? If the grass is getting dry, order concrete for it. It's easy.
Just the money on the projected cost on the loggers, storage cabinets, 6 grand.
All on the van?
Right.
Yes.
Y'all know?
What's the question?
The projected.
I think that's
an answer.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
the bins should be accompanied with it.
Kind of busy.
I understand. It's kind of
busy. It's Thursday. Kind of busy.
So, I don't have that in front of me. I'm sorry.
That's good. That's good. That's good.
Anything else on the construction? Get a chance and you can sneak around the construction fence during the day if you're passing by and you want to do a quick little drive through on the old bus loop. You get a first hand look at what that project looks like. They're moving. Exterior drywall studs are going up and HVAC ducts are starting to go in the air. So they're working fast to get that thing dried in. And of course, they poured a slab at CTE last week. That building was due for delivery this week. We'll see how that goes. But as soon as it hits the ground, the concrete's already approaching its cure date, so they'll be able, within a day or so of Wednesday of this week, that thing can start going up in the air, weather permitting. That building will go quick because there's not much to it. They are behind schedule on that, by the way, but they should be able to make that time.
I had to pick up some clipper blades from my ag shop last week. Oh, man. I should appreciate some insulation on the back wall. That heats up a lot. That plywood ain't got the heat out of there.
That temporary wall has got its challenges. Those are a lot of different aspects.
Surprising.
It wasn't so stout until the Hurricane Laura was forecasted and then the back reinforced it. It's chewed up a lot of their space.
Yeah.
All right.
Can we pull out the van just to talk about it for a second?
Sure.
I just want to understand what it was. Is that because we have a 6-inch van? Just for discussion, I'm not sure really that much from the motion or the vote, but is that because we have always had van at the elementary campus?
That was part of our conversion in the 6th grade campus that mainly Peach Creek was to build
and use it.
Pinewoods has it.
Pinewoods has a band facility that's never been used for 6th grade band until 6th grade. Only when 6th grade was there, taken off, and now they're back. So we're just doing some add on there, but the other space is kind of back completely replaced. The rest of the place.
I should come see those. You want to see them in the heat green if they really look good. The more we send the placement of the soils, for sure. So that's what we're
talking about. And we're covered here because it's the new facility and we can.
And one thing I would like to add, Mr. Best and his team have been very, very good about addressing needs and not wants. So they've been very good. Darwin's done an excellent job working with those guys. They've been very good about addressing the problems solutions as well, coming and bringing solutions to the table that are cost effective, and it's been a pleasure to work with them so far.
I was thinking we had already had those facilities, but I guess I knew of the music room at the.
Presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
to adopt and set by order resolution 2020 ad valorem tax rate for interest and seeking 43 cents per 100 as presented.
I'll second.
All in favor?
So this was by online.
So does it? I was going to say, does this apply to avatars too, or
this was some of the campus avatars that we saw. Just to the election coming up, we feel like we'll be approved with the policy for the board, so you guys can vote on.
That's what I'm kind of wondering.
Would apply, yes. So it would apply to the
Teachers
of the teacher in that district.
Can you turn off avatars on campus to prevent that, or you can just click that where it's a turn it on and go?
So that it's a representation.
Yes, according to our attorneys, that we follow with it. And it's probably not a bad idea to do this. Most districts have a dress code policy for employees that prevents that. We just have never had it before, so I think it's probably not a good idea. Again, as I was telling Mr. Chesson, like, students have a very right to freedom of expression.
As it should be.
So.
Well, I guess my concern was, when we talk about emoji was more of a tag versus a dress code.
But it would fall under that.
Under what they represent,
yes.
Digital representation of itself.
We said no, just that's the attorney here. I'm just kidding.
Did you do that?
Well, you did. So.
Yeah, we did. We consulted with Ms. Scotty quite a bit on this. So I don't think this was the first instance of this in the state. Just people have never had that issue come up before. But this would apply across all levels of slogan.
From right to left.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a lot of concerns.
So now we're
T-shirts or other clothing, the slogan symbols or advertisements may not be worn except for district approved t-shirts.
And a district approved would be if a teacher wanted to honor any. I'm thinking of students who were punished for flying those flags the other day, the blue lives. Anyways, but I mean, it's a student deal. It's probably to do with just didn't listen to the teacher. So they got punished for running out on the field with blue lives.
Oh, awesome.
Right. So, I just don't want unintended consequences, I guess you'd say.
Right. Well, I guess that's
but if it's student approved, I mean, district approved, kind of takes care of that. So,
right. Well, I mean, spirit shirts are pretty simple. Just anything that's football obvious or anything related to campus look like. Do what? You can't hear me?
No. I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. Anything that would do with the Wildcats or any campus themes that they've established for the year would be on.
only punished for just not listening to the rules, right? You have them. Yeah. I mean, I get that. That's cool.
What's the process, I guess, to have it approved?
They have to submit it to their principal.
And that process, that's where we kind of already know that process or whatever.
It's been, every shirt has to get approved from administration. So this was just a unique year. And so here we are with this dress code that tightens things up.
But when we look, when that issue was brought up, we didn't have this, which we probably should have.
I just got a question on that, though. I mean, I wish there was a button that you click to turn off those avatars, because what we see dealt with this a lot, I mean, it's, I don't know how to say it, you know, but there's a lot of people that are brave behind the keyboard that they won't do something in person. So when we address this, because the teacher's going to wear that, teacher or employees aren't going to wear something in person that they're brave enough to do on computer.
But that's what they're saying, is this will address that as well.
Yes. Because
the avatar represents the individual, they're saying that this will address
exactly.
Yes. Concerns.
Yeah.
He made it very clear to Stephanie with the concern. Correct. And so this is what she said is that. See the two different enrollment counts. The first one is from the 8th of September, and the other one was from the 17th of August. And so you can see we've had some kids come back, and we anticipate that we'll have more kids come back, and our enrollment will continue to grow, especially with the pre-K ramp up. I think it's amazing to me, and Kevin mentioned this to me probably very early on. Arlene's projections are just, she does it. They're really, really, really tight. But the pre-K was a surprise for us. And again, I think we covered some of the reasons why that might have been. On the enrollment piece, Kevin, and we'll cover this in subsequent meetings, but Kevin and I had a good meeting. I think I told you guys this, I think the board report could have been in an email. We had a good meeting with PASA last week, and looking at when our next potential bond might be, and looking at enrollment trends. And so to get on their schedule, we set a tentative date for November of 22, but that can move up or down depending on enrollment and growth, but that is, we had to start there so we can get on the calendar, so that means the next October, they would pull our, October 21, they would pull our PIMS data and our snapshot and do a study, whether that study put us in December, and then we can start with PIMS. And so that's just getting prepared for those things. So we'll keep you guys updated on enrollment and how we're doing there. Again, you can go to the slideshow. You know, it's just, again, great having our kids back in school. You know, one thing, as you see some of these pictures, some of the things we've gotten, you know, in posting pictures of our kids back, you know, we get comments on social media, are they socially distant? Why are they not wearing masks and stuff? It's just, you know, being mindful and intentional about, you know, what we're posting, provide as much context as possible. So, you know, Dr. Barnes visiting campuses a lot and is challenging people to take selfies with, you know, when he sees social contracts and things like that, so we appreciate that. Our band, back in full swing, football, been some long drives. Let's see, what else? Celebrating our second birthday on September 1st, that was awesome. So good things happen, we're excited, everybody, you heard that tonight, and you saw, I think, the response on Facebook, everybody's very excited that we're bringing our kids back. One other thing, I mentioned this, I think, to Suzanne at the beginning of this, but one of the things we have to look out for in this next legislative session, you know, as we head into this next year, is Chairman, you really made the comment, and I can't remember if it was in the TAMS session or Benny was the one that reported it to our TAMS board, that, well, you know, the state is facing a $4.6 billion deficit, and the comment was made, there's $15 billion in fund balance out there for that our districts have. And so I just want us to be very, you know, mindful of that conversation from the state level. That, I wouldn't be surprised if they
addressing facilities is a good topic.
Yep.
Stay focused.
Well, just a very unsettling legislative session.
Be careful there, because there is historical reference where the state just skipped the last page to take care of what you fund balance, what you figured out.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that can go either way.
There's a number of ways that they can.
That is where that 15B does comment comes into, right there.
And the one thing that I just to share with everybody, state, all our state people, they like to talk about how they adopt a balanced budget all the time. But every county has debt, every school district has debt, and every local, every city has debt. And they don't want to talk about that. And the state is mostly the funding source, or locks up how it gets distributed. And they want to talk about how they balance the budget, but they don't ever want to talk. They want to talk about what we have in fund balance, but they don't want to talk about what we have in debt. So just something to push back on some of our state representatives on.
All right. Couple of items for the next meeting: campus spotlight, student recognition, NT Fair winners, district recognition, curriculum management plan update, band report, DAP report, audit report, textbook adoption committee, and report for continuing education.
Keep having to move these things. I don't know if it's possible to as us as a whole get to visit other campuses, something that we've done. So I don't know if it's possible to hold one at Greenleaf or Peach Creek. You know, I mean,
I know Kansas loves setting up different campuses.
It may be a headache, but hey, I mean, it's really good for us to see. I mean, we get to see this, you know. But, yeah. So, plus two, I live on the east side of town, so, you know.
I'll say it's a physical nightmare for everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can always
go
and visit in our own time. They don't have to set all this up, so, you know.
I had too many welds and squirting things in my life. I can't hear anything
else. Now, are we to anywhere? Are we moving forward? I didn't read your tracking from Friday. I was kind of busy.
Okay.
Teacher incentive program, are we moving forward with that? I'm not saying we need to put on the agenda yet at this second, but.
Mr. Kroger will provide an update on where we are at the October teacher incentive program. We will provide an update on our October workshop. How about that?
Hey, I see microphones hanging out here. Maybe we need to put lower goals.
I believe that our student participation and fees.
It's on the tracking chart.
Tied together.
Yes.
For that same workshop.
It's on.
It's as the work for the fees and.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, y'all are awesome. Thinking ahead. What?
I like that.
Yeah, I'm with Alan. Apparently, I missed about four emails from Katie that I just read tonight. Hey, but I do like the Jason's Deli thing to go along with, so I appreciate you having my back with that one.
Is that what you do with Jason's Deli?
Here, Katie.
Awesome.
Well, I'd like to adjourn with no objection.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Yes. Hey, what do we need to do to pick up? We need to trash. I'll go get more. I'll get it. Thank you for the microphone, buddy. We use it a couple times. We'll probably do the 4 minute on 3 minutes.
Hey, it's your day. I think it'd be neat to utilize the time to go see. If it's a logistical nightmare, it's just a question if it was possible.
And then
once we have it,
and then junior high there.
And then picture it.
Yep. I've got something.
Are we paying in here?
Are they painting? Oh, yeah. We probably can finish the process until they
Thank you.